Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we really try to cut through the noise and get to the insights that matter. Today, we're plunging into something truly fascinating and honestly incredibly impactful, the whole world of no-code and low-code development.
Yeah.
Our mission here is to equip you, our listeners, with not just the basic facts, but, you know, the surprising implications and a real strategic understanding of this field. It's evolving so fast, we'll explore what these platforms actually are, why they're seeing this massive surge right now, their benefits, which are pretty game-changing, but also the crucial considerations, the potential downsides, and where this is all heading.
And it really is a pivotal moment for this tech. I mean, you look around, there's just this unprecedented demand for digital solutions everywhere, every sector.
Yeah.
But we're running headfirst into this, well, persistent tech talent gap. It's real. So no code and low code, they're more than just tools. They're fundamentally democratizing how we create applications. They're empowering a much wider range of people to actually innovate and turn their ideas into reality. It's about getting more people building and building faster.
Okay, so let's unpack that. We hear no code and low code thrown around constantly.
Yeah.
What's the actual difference? Like, fundamentally, what do these terms mean if you're someone looking to build something?
Right. So at its heart, no code, it refers to platforms that let you build complete software applications using entirely visual interfaces. Think of it like assembling an app with, you know, intuitive drag and drop components, almost like advanced Lego bricks, really. You're designing, customizing, deploying solutions all visually without writing a single line of traditional code. It's a truly hands-off approach to the coding part.
Okay, hands-off. And then there's low code, which sounds like it's, well, somewhere in the middle.
Precisely. Yeah, low-code platforms, they also speed up development using visual building blocks, templates, much like no-code. But, and this is the crucial difference, they still allow for the addition of custom code. This means if you kind of hit a wall with the visual tools, or maybe you need some highly specialized, really complex function, professional developers can actually step in and write that custom code to extend it or integrate it. It balances the speed with more flexibility.
Okay, so if no code is no code needed and low code is some code allowed if you want it, who are these actually for? Are they aiming at the same users?
Not exactly, no. No code is really ideal for, say, business users, non-technical people, small business owner, even teams within larger companies that aren't IT, like HR or finance. They might need a custom solution, but they don't have developers just sitting there. It's truly about empowerment for the non-technical crowd. Low code, on the other hand, while it automates a lot, it's often aimed more at professional developers. It helps them speed through the more generic coding tasks, right? So they can focus their brain power, their expertise on the really complex, differentiating parts of an application. It's kind of like giving a master chef a super high-tech prep kitchen for all the chopping and basic stuff so they can focus on the, you know, the gourmet finish.
Yeah.
Both democratize creation, definitely, but they empower different groups in pretty distinct ways.
That makes sense. Given that clear distinction, it's maybe not so surprising we're seeing this, well, absolute explosion in their adoption. But
yeah,
looking beyond just the numbers, what's the most profound, maybe even unsettling implication of this growth for, say, traditional software firms or how companies structure their IT?
Yeah, those numbers are staggering. Let's just put a few out there. The global low-code market, it's projected to hit something like $101.7 billion by 2030. That's growing at a compound annual rate of, get this, 22.3% from $30.1 billion in 2024. It's huge. And maybe even more striking, by 2026, low-code platforms are expected to power 75%, three-quarters of all new applications. What's really unsettling, or maybe just a sign of massive change, is that it's not just about efficiency. It's a fundamental shift in where the power to create software actually resides. It implies this potential redistribution of resources, maybe influence, away from those traditional code-heavy IT departments. It forces companies to reevaluate these long-held structures, even the skills they look for in tech roles. It's a big shift.
22.3% compound annual growth. That's incredibly fast. Do you think of like a comparable industry that saw that kind of boom? And what could we learn from how that played out?
That's a really good question. You could draw parallels maybe to the early days of cloud computing or even when personal computers first became widespread. In those times, we saw this democratization of access, of capability that just fundamentally reshaped entire industries. And like those shifts, low code and no code aren't just about new tools. It's a whole new paradigm for businesses focused on agility, on responsiveness. And the drivers behind it are pretty clear. This urgent need for faster app development, hyper automation everywhere. And critically, that big IT talent gap we mentioned. Something like 82% of companies report struggling to hire qualified engineers. 70% couldn't find the IT staff they needed created back in 2020. So IT departments, they're just swamped. Growing backlogs. Essentially, these platforms are stepping in to fill a really critical void. And importantly, offering substantial cost savings while they do it.
It really sounds like they're becoming less of a luxury and more of a necessity then, just filling those crucial skill gaps. And speaking of new skills, this leads us perfectly into this new kind of builder that's emerging, the citizen developer. What exactly is a citizen developer? And what does their rapid rise tell us about where software creation is headed?
Ah, the citizen developer. It's a fascinating phenomenon, truly. These are employees, often with, you know, little or maybe no formal coding background, who are creating applications using these business-approved no-code or low-code tools. They're usually working outside the traditional IT department structure, solving problems that are specific to their own team or their function. Their rise isn't just about technical tools. It's fundamentally reshaping corporate culture. Think about it. It moves innovation from being this centralized IT function to more of a distributed kind of organic network across the whole organization. And consider this statistic. Citizen developers are projected to outnumber professional developers 4-to-1 pretty soon. And the demand for the apps they build, it's growing 5 times faster than traditional IT departments can even handle. By 2026, non-IT professionals are expected to make up 80% of the low-code user base. That's up from 60% in 2021. This isn't just a minor trend. It's a profound cultural shift, an operational one, too.
4-to-1. Wow. That is a huge cultural shift, decentralizing innovation like that. But beyond just clearing IT backlogs, what's the most impactful, maybe less obvious benefit of empowering non-technical staff this way?
That's a great point. The most understated benefit, I think, is probably the psychological shift within the organization. It really fosters this culture of immediate problem solving, innovation at every level. Employees don't have to just file a ticket and wait weeks, maybe months for IT to get to their specific departmental need anymore. They can actually prototype solutions themselves, test them, iterate really quickly, directly contributing to their own team's efficiency. And this accelerates app development dramatically. About 71% of organizations using citizen development report at least 50% faster delivery times. Some see 100% or more improvement. Plus, it reduces the strain on IT for about 84% of enterprises, which, you know, lets those core IT teams refocus on the more complex strategic stuff. While the business users handle their day-to-day tactical application needs, it really is about building a more responsive, adaptable organization from the ground up.
That's a powerful vision. But I have to ask, it almost sounds a bit too good to be true. Where do you usually see the biggest trade-offs? Like, where do these platforms tend to struggle compared to traditional coding, even with all these clear benefits?
That's a crucial question, absolutely, because, yeah, no tool is perfect, right? No silver bullet. The benefits are tangible. Things like accessibility and democratization just drastically lowering the barrier for people to build things. Rapid prototyping and faster time to market. You can get an MVP, a minimum viable product, out in days or weeks, not months, get feedback fast, and significant cost savings we mentioned, potentially cutting development costs by up to 70%. Some see a 260% ROI over 3 years. That's huge. But the trade-offs are definitely real. For instance, while you gain increased productivity and reduced IT backlogs, something like 90% of devs using low-code report fewer than 5 app requests in their backlog per month, you often sacrifice a degree of that ultimate flexibility and agility, and especially customization. That's a big one.
Okay, so that balance between speed and customization.
Yeah.
Where do these platforms really shine with actual tangible results? Can you give us a few real-world examples that kind of highlight that balance?
Absolutely. Think about scenarios where getting something out fast, testing it, iterating, that's the top priority. Take Thomas Frank, for instance. He built a $2.1 million a year business, mostly teaching people Notion and selling templates he made. He started with literally $5 and scaled massively, purely using no-code tools. Then there's Jacob Klug of Creme Digital. He was, 20 years old? Built a $1.2 million a year no-code agency using tools like Bubble. Started it as a side hustle in high school with just $250.
Those are incredible numbers, especially starting with almost nothing. It really does show that democratization aspect.
Yeah.
What about using them to connect with existing systems or automate more complex workflows?
For sure. Look at Dominic Sobe, a solo founder who built HelpKit. It's a neat little software product that turns Notion pages into professional-looking knowledge bases. He got it to $54,000 a year, profitable, with basically zero startup cost. Or a company like Compound, an e-commerce automation agency. They're doing $210,000 a year. Why? huge demand for automating these business-to-business processes. They report reducing labor costs by 90% using tools like Zapier to connect things. These examples really hammer home the potential for rapid innovation, significant revenue, even operational efficiency, often with minimal cash upfront and maybe not a traditional tech background. They highlight that ability to quickly test an idea and then scale it up pretty efficiently once it proves itself.
It sounds like that speed, that ability to build quickly, is maybe a double-edged sword, though.
Yeah.
Immense power, but also immense responsibility. Which brings us to something critical, maybe often overlooked. What are some of the hidden complexities, the gotchas that organizations might miss when they jump into no-code or low-code?
That's precisely it. The promise is so appealing, right? But the reality, well, it demands really careful management. One big challenge is definitely limited customization. We touched on it. These platforms are powerful, but they can struggle with highly specialized business logic or really unique UI/UX requirements. About 39% of business leaders worry about this. There's also, despite the no-code name, still a potential learning curve. You have to learn the specific platform, its features, its way of doing things. Another major hurdle can be integration limitations, especially trying to connect with older legacy systems. That can be tricky. In fact, a striking 42% of businesses say legacy tech is a significant barrier to innovation for them, even more so than budget constraints or lack of skills.
Right, so even with visual tools, plugging into the existing tech landscape isn't always straightforward. What about when these apps grow? Do they just scale infinitely?
Not always, no. Scalability concerns are definitely real, especially for highly complex apps or ones needing massive scale. The underlying platform infrastructure can impose limits. So at some point, custom coding might still be necessary just for optimal performance. Then there's platform dependence or, you know, vendor lock-in. If you rely heavily on one specific platform, switching providers can become incredibly difficult, time-consuming, expensive. You might even need to completely rewrite your applications. And maybe the most critical challenge, potentially the riskiest, is shadow IT and governance issues. Think about it. Non-technical employees building apps, maybe without proper IT oversight. It can lead to security vulnerabilities, compliance problems, messes. It creates technical debt that the central IT team eventually has to find, understand, and clean up. And now, with generative AI getting integrated, that adds another layer. Security concerns around Gen AI worry about 62% of organizations using these platforms.
That's quite a sobering list of risks. It all sounds like it could become a bit of a Wild West scenario if it's not managed really carefully. So this raises a really important question. How do organizations actually navigate this minefield, especially around security and ensuring things are built well for the long term without totally stifling the innovation these tools are supposed to enable?
That is the million-dollar question. And the answer really lies in low-code governance. It becomes absolutely indispensable. Governance here isn't about locking things down and saying no. It's the organizational framework. The set of rules and processes that guides both professional developers and citizen developers in building custom applications responsibly. It's not about control, it's about enablement within safe boundaries. You need clear rules, strict security requirements, eligibility criteria, like who can build what kind of app. You need essential training, especially around data security best practices, and you absolutely need robust IT oversight. IDC's role fundamentally changes here. They shift from being the sole builders to becoming more like architects and guardians. They set the guardrails, defining security standards, data governance policies, performance guidelines, protecting the system's integrity, while still giving the business teams the freedom they need to innovate quickly. It has to be a partnership between IT and the business units.
Okay, so it really isn't an either decision than, you know, no code or traditional code. It sounds much more like how they work together effectively. What does this future of coexistence actually look like? And how does it redefine the role of a, let's say, traditional software developer?
Exactly. It's increasingly about coexistence, about hybrid approaches. That's where things are heading. You see many startups, for example, finding huge success using no-code tools for that initial rapid prototyping, validating their ideas, building that MVP really fast. Then, once they get traction, once they need more complex customization or greater scalability, they might gradually transition parts of it to traditional code or integrate custom-coded components. And this isn't about replacing traditional developers at all. It's about changing their role, evolving it. Developers can now shift their focus to higher value, more strategic tasks. Things like designing the overall system architecture, handling complex API integrations, and crucially, establishing those governance frameworks and ensuring quality assurance across the board. They become the engineers of the sophisticated underlying infrastructure, enabling more people to build safely on top.
That sounds like a really powerful evolution, actually, letting developers kind of move up the value chain, focus on the harder problems. What about software architects in this new landscape? Does their role become even more critical?
Oh, absolutely. Indispensable, really. Software architects become absolutely vital in guiding the successful adoption of these platforms. They're the ones establishing those essential guardrails we talked about, making sure there are proper integration layers, often using APIs, decoupling services, maybe even designing microservices architectures. They bring in the best practices for maintainability, things often overlooked initially, like version control, code reusability, modular design principles, and they set up continuous monitoring systems to track performance, reliability, security. Their role becomes much more strategic, more of an enabling function, ensuring the whole enterprise ecosystem stays robust, secure, scalable, even as more and more applications are being created, often by these non-traditional builders.
It's definitely clear this field is anything but static. It's moving so quickly. Looking ahead, what are some of the most exciting, maybe even disruptive trends we can anticipate in the no-code, low-code space over the next few years?
The future trends are genuinely exciting, yeah. I think we'll see increasingly AI-driven platforms. Think generative AI tools that might be capable of creating pretty advanced applications just from simple natural language prompts. Imagine describing the app you want, and an AI platform just generates a starting point, or maybe even the whole thing. We're also seeing the development of more industry-specific low-code solutions, platforms with pre-built templates, components, even compliance features tailored specifically for sectors like healthcare or education or finance, retail, and expect growth in multi-cloud and cross-platform ecosystems, making it easier to integrate apps built with different tools, running across various cloud services, creating a more seamless, connected development environment. And finally, just the continued expansion and maturation of these citizen development initiatives globally. It's solidifying this as a truly fundamental shift in how organizations approach software development and problem solving.
Wow. Okay, so we've really taken a deep dive today. We started by defining no-code and low-code, looked at that explosive market growth, heard some really inspiring success stories.
Yeah.
But also explored the critical challenges and risks these tools present and peered into the exciting future landscape they seem to be shaping.
Yeah, and just to reinforce that core message, no code and low code development, they aren't just powerful forces changing how software gets built. They are fundamentally reducing the time it takes, the cost involved, and critically, they're empowering a much, much broader group of creators, people who maybe never thought they could build software before. It really is about bridging that talent gap we keep talking about, accelerating digital transformation efforts, and fostering innovation across entire organizations in ways we're probably only just beginning to fully grasp.
So a final thought for you, our listener, to maybe mull over after this deep dive. Given these rapid advancements, the increasing power and capability of these tools, how might you rethink your own approach to solving problems or driving innovation, either in your work or even in your personal projects? What new possibilities could this democratization of creation, as we've called it, unlock for your next big idea? Maybe an idea you previously shelved because you thought you lacked the technical skills to bring it to life. Something to think about.